Hi, I'm David Kaplan, and you're listening to the Sports Talk Live podcast. Enjoy the show. Best player in baseball will not become a free agent. Hallelujah. Mike Trout is set to be an Angel for life, nearing the largest contract in professional sports history. 12 years, reportedly worth $430 million. So now the ceiling has been set. What will Chris Bryant command on the open market? Do the Cubs have to get him to sign an extension ASAP? Bulls lost last night. They could have pulled it within a half game of the Cavs, but they went ahead and beat the Suns. Is it time to take the tank more seriously? And despite getting a point, it was a bad loss for the Blackhawks at home. They fall to the Canucks and are now 4 points back with just 10 games to play, and they have to jump three teams. Are they too far gone? Jeremy Roenick will join us from NBCSN to discuss. And welcome in to Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Hope you had a really good day. I'm David Kaplan. Panel for today's show, he is the college hoops expert at 670 The Score, and you should read him on the Action Network. We say hello to Eli Herskovich. And from The Score, my man Connor McKnight. And from our newsroom, the one and only Layla Rahimi. All right, let's get started with some baseball talk. Mike Trout inks a 12-year extension, 2 years left on his current deal. He will retire as an L.A. Angel of Anaheim. Plus, no opt-outs in the deal by his request. I love it. I love seeing guys stay with their teams. I love guys not chasing. You know, I got to get to free agency. What's your take?
Well, it's cool. He's deserved the contract, right? He's been baseball's best player without a doubt the first 7 years.
Might be the best of all time.
He really could be. He could be the best of all time, and that's a pretty good argument to have. Still, though, he earned the contract with his play. The Angels now owe him a roster that can get him back to the playoffs. You understand?
Like, they do?
They've got the Albert Pujols contract, which goes away in 3 seasons. You've got Justin Upton signed, so it could be a lineup that actually works for him, but you've got pitching issues to resolve. You've got Shohei Ohtani's elbow to heal. This is a team that needs to commit itself to getting back to the playoffs. I think a big reason that Mike Trout is kind of in the ether and that you've got to argue for him being the best player of all time is because he plays in the West Coast and hasn't been in the playoffs but one time.
One time. You guys.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's awesome to see, like Connor mentioned, a player stay home. Mike Trout, one of the best players in baseball. And I know we're going to talk about Chris Bryant, too. To have one of those elite stars in your city, the Angels now have something to build around for the long term now, whatever happens with Sosa. So I love the move for the Angels.
I like it because Hot Stove 2020 has already started, so at least we can talk about Hot Stove happening for next season because the biggest name is off the board. In all seriousness, this is something we suspected. We all suspected that Mike Trout was happy where he was. He's incredibly loyal. So the fact that he is also playing for an owner who loves to write big checks and Artie Moreno, story checks out, right? But if you're a baseball fan, it's a shame that not enough people appreciate Mike Trout. It is a shame that he is in a division that houses a recent World Series champion in the Astros, and they still, even though he is in the second biggest media market in the country, doesn't get the attention he deserves. Everybody should know that he's the best player in baseball, hands down.
When we were at spring training, we ran into somebody who was represented by the same group as Mike Trout. And I said, what do you think Trout's going to do? He said, it's 100% he's signing there. He loves his life. He said, do not believe he wants to go. He likes going to the Eagles games in the offseason. He loves living in Southern California. So what does it mean for Chris Bryant?
It means the bidding starts at $30 million, right? I mean, if you look at the extensions that have been signed in Nolan Arenado and now Trout, you look at the contracts getting inked with Manny Machado and Bryce Harper, like, you start at $30 million if you want to talk about an extension. Speaking of extension, my God, go yard, young man. He's worth that kind of money. When he hits free agency, though, he'll be 30. So, you know, you see the benefit here of paying the extra money when Mike Trout's 39 by having him for his prime. Like, that's the down payment. Do it, because you need him before he turns 32. That's when you can win a title with him for sure.
Yeah, I'd say you front load that contract, not only $30 million, but you front load it with guarantees because this is Chris Bryant's prime. So his best numbers are going to be right now. He might regress by the time he's 30. You don't expect that, but I think if you're the Cubs, you offer that extension right now and you front load it.
Here's the mystery, right, is we don't know what Chris Bryant we're going to see this season. Was it injuries or is it that he's a little more human? It's a huge year for him coming from a plate appearance standpoint and the money that he will command. This is a season that will dictate his annual salary. He has already kind of let people know where the bar stands with him when he acknowledged Nolan Arenado's contract. And I think we all say that it's based on the yearly salary. But the question is, do you sign Chris Bryant soon based on what you've already seen, or do you bet on his potential?
That's my question.
Up?
If you were the GM of the Chicago Cubs and your phone rang and it's Chris Bryant, he said, forget Scott, I'm willing to do a deal right now. We'll play for whatever he's getting, I think 15 this year. I'll buy out the last 2 years arbitration and the next 8 years, a 10-year deal, $300 million.
I'd love to do that deal. The unknown factor
better know he's healthy.
Is the push. Well, I think you could probably bet on him being healthy for the bulk of probably that contract, right? Shoulders scare you a little bit, to be sure, but Chris Bryant's talking like he's going to win himself another NL MVP, and I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, the guy is as confident as he's ever sounded. But if what we don't know yet is the push and pull on what the labor negotiations and what labor unrest is going to mean to these players.
And I'd want to get as much of my money up front as I could.
And if that's starting to turn players into signing more extensions, if that's starting to force them to go, okay, let's get some cost certainty, let's get some upfront money because who knows how long a lockout or a strike could last, then it's up to baseball teams to use that kind of leverage to their advantage. The other thing that goes against Bryant, though, is he's a free agent at 30. Name the free agents at 30 years old this offseason and last that have made themselves a whole lot of money. There are a handful, but not more than there used to be. That number is shrinking,
that's
not
why
expanding.
If I was him, if the money was offered to me right now, I'm taking $300 million, 100%. If they say, let's revisit it after this season, I'm going to go out and put up as good a numbers as I can and go, pay me.
But either way, it's a win-win situation then, isn't it?
Yep.
The Cubs get their best version of Chris Bryant, if that's the case, if they wait, and then he earns even more of his salary. The other problem is, as we all know, who else the Cubs have to pay? Kyle Hendricks, Javi Baez. And that's where it gets to be such a huge challenge. That's where you don't know.
You don't. Okay, so here's a question. Bryant could be gone. Arenado is gone. Trout is gone. Nola is gone. Severino locked up. Does this affect the White Sox rebuild?
100%. I mean, you look at their prospects right now. You could say Eloy Jimenez is going to be a star. You could say extend him right now. But you don't know the way the rest of these prospects are going to pan out. Dylan Cease has had injury problems across his career. Dane Dunning is now on the shelf for the second time in his minor league career. So I have issues just from the prospect side of things. And then you want to talk about adding to this team going forward free agency-wise. You're not talking at least stars right now.
Machado's off the board. I mean, there's a lot of guys they didn't get.
Luis Robert's got the thumb again. That scares me a bit.
Remember, though, if the White Sox aren't ready to play at $30 million a year, then that doesn't affect their rebuild because that's the price of poker for these elite free agents. So if you're not willing to go to that level or able to, one of the two, then you're not going to be able to sit at that table. So really, I don't know if it affects the White Sox rebuild necessarily. You've still got guys like Christian Yelich who will get out of his deal at about age 30. You've still got a couple of elite players like Altuve who may be on the back end of their careers but could be that plug-in veteran guy that you overpay for to be the piece that
but
wins
the
title.
But not the centerpiece. Franchise, no. Machado, Harper,
no.
Trout guy.
Generational guy.
That's what Correct. The White Sox rebuild has always depended on, though, is that they were going to create their own centerpiece win-because-of type player. It's unfortunate that they built as much of it through pitching as they did because pitching gets hurt or is always hurt anyway. But Eloy Jimenez, I have very high levels of confidence that he's going to be an absolute stud. You get a couple other pieces, you start building around, and maybe they're going to have to plug in holes around the rest of the
elites. Would you extend Eloy Jimenez right now?
I absolutely would. But if I'm Eloy Jimenez, I'm not doing that at all. Arbitration will make you plenty of money. You've got a labor negotiation in 3 years when you're, 23 years old. He's going to be fine. If the White Sox could lock him up, I'd absolutely do it. That's a no-brainer move.
You know what's funny is you mentioned Jose Altuve, and he came under a lot of fire when he signed a very team-friendly deal. And it's paid absolute dividends for the Houston Astros. It's
Mike funny Trout that signed a deal that people said, just wait, you'll
Chris
get right.
Chris Sale signed it with the White Sox.
Yeah.
Quintana.
So there's been this precedent set. already. So we're just now seeing it come to massive fruition on the backside. But still, we're talking about guys in their 30s being unemployed right now. We have a Cy Young winner in the American League who still hasn't found a job.
It's a first ballot Hall of Famer in Craig Kimbrel.
Absolutely. And that's the real concern to me. And those are pitchers. And I still say pitching plays. I don't care.
I think, though, you know, when you look at the Altuve extension that he signed and Sale to a certain degree, too, like, those were players that had risk attached to them. Altuve wasn't ranked as a prospect. He didn't have pedigree coming up. He was a revelation to the Astros as much as he was anybody else. Sale had injury issues. Quintana was busted for steroids in the minor leagues. And if that matters to you, then maybe you get him at a discount there.
Like, that's the thing. Jimenez is from the Dominican Republic.
Mm-hmm.
You go to him and say, hey, man, we'll sign you for how many million?
Sure.
Family may go take the money.
But he's also, I mean, like, he's part of this conversation now where the top five prospects in baseball, whether it's him or Tatis Jr. or Guerrero Jr. or whatever, like, they know their value. They've got guys like Chris Bryant now speaking up for the up-and-coming non-union members now, but soon-to-be union members. And we haven't had that before, not in a real vocal sense.
There's a big name in free agency we should probably watch when actual Hot Stove begins, and that's Xander Bogaerts. So that's probably our tipping point. And then we'll know how everything shakes
out. And when you see this kind of money today, a guy like Mookie Betts is going,
oh,
love it.
Mookie Betts is going to get himself, again, the conversation starts at $30 million. Xander Bogaerts might be the guy that you get for, I don't know, Arenado money or Harper. Remember, Harper's only $26 million a year. Like, the deal they got with extending the last 3 years onto that contract, average annual value-wise, that lets them add another player. And even, you know, going back to the Mike Trout deal, the Angels' payroll sits at $170 million. Mike Trout makes 36. You could add one more Mike Trout contract onto the Angels' payroll before you get to the luxury tax.
Yeah.
Baseball's awash in money. They just don't like to tell you so much.
Well, yeah. Artie will write the check. We know that.
He's done it before.
10-plus billion-dollar industry.
It's a nice business to
There's
be in
plenty of money out there. All right, Yu Darvish pitched into the fifth inning today and then had to leave his start with a blister on his index finger, but says that it is nothing to be concerned about. In fact, he even told Jesse Rogers of ESPN 1000 that he won't urinate on his hand. He's confident that he will heal up on its own or with some cream. So that's nice. I wanted to make sure everybody knew.
Good. Thank you for that, Cap.
Appreciate watching
good
eating to their
know.
Dinner. But he pitched well again today, and it's good to see this guy. Is, for me, that is a huge chip if he can pitch the way he's doing.
I'll believe it when I see it, kind of thing with Yu Darvish. He was dominant in Texas and obviously in L.A. up until the World Series when he stunk for L.A. But you look at the way he threw last year, and again, just the command issues for me. I get it. He's pitched well in spring so far. John Lester thinks this Cubs rotation is going to be elite. Petkoa disagrees, clearly. I want to see Cole Hamels and John Lester and Yu Darvish pitch in the regular season before we start to say that Yu Darvish is going to be back to how good he was before that.
I am still on a long trajectory with Darvish in that we did see him struggle a little bit as he left Texas. There was the discussion about him tipping his pitches. That was something that was therefore brought to an absolute change of scenery in LA. If you're going to see how a pitcher is really going to develop from change of scenery, take him out of Arlington, where it's 95 degrees and everything flies out of the park. Go to Dodger Stadium. And we still saw the same concerns there. So we have yet to see Darvish fully correct that over at least even a few months. I'm still waiting to see that before I make any opinion about what we're going to see out of him as a whole. And I think that's fair. I think he would say the same thing.
Probably
actually.
Right.
I think so. It hurts, though, that your 126, 130-something million-dollar pitcher is the guy that you've got to wait and see on.
Yeah.
You know, that sucks that that's the case.
Tyler Chatwood, too.
But he's, well, that's another $13 million that's going to sit in the middle of the bullpen. That's terrible. But still, though, for Darvish, like, he's the guy that stands apart, I think, from the rest of the four that are in the rotation now. He's the guy with velocity. He's the guy with stuff. He's the guy that comes at you with an arsenal that's like nine pitches long. And the rest of the guys are kind of finesse and command and left-handed. And Kyle Hendricks works like a left-hander, even if he's right-handed. You know what I mean? That's the rest of it. It gives that whole rotation a much different,
if
better
he's
trajectory,
right,
doesn't it?
It's, if he's right,
but that's a big guy. If.
If
but
he's
it's not
right.
Like this guy's never had success.
Right.
He's been a good pitcher.
Understandably, obviously, going back to his first 3 years or so in Texas. But The pressure thing last year clearly was an issue, and I want to see him have success before I say otherwise.
Yeah, he's got to prove it.
Can I ask a question, though? Because we talk about when pitchers add pitches, how that sometimes affects others, the cut fastball, cutter being the obvious one that affects what happens to fastballs and all of that. Do you think that maybe Darvish is at a point in his career where he takes a few pitches off of the arsenal and then goes with, like, a 4 or 5 pitch lineup instead of 7? And
he tried last year when he was struggling to narrow it down to like 4 really solid pitches.
Yeah.
Just wasn't healthy.
I think, though, with like guys that have 9 like that, well, not actually 9, but, you know, 6.
We used to joke that it was 9. It kind of is.
The gyro ball.
Like, yeah, right? There's 2 different sliders and then the cutter that really cuts and then the other one. I think, though, like, isn't it nice to have that many so that you can kind of circulate them through the year? Like, it's not going to be that for one season, you've got all 9 working. It's going to be these 3 work now, and then you lose your slider, so you move to your curveball, and then you can cut your change. Like, maybe it's nicer for him. Like, he's always come up pitching that way. Even as a 16-year-old in Japan, he's had all that stuff.
I think it's nice when you have command, but when you're not working with it. And the slider is the one that really seems to be what people lean on. But if that slider isn't working, then your fastball command is going to be affected.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a pound with 96, 97. You're absolutely right about that.
But if he can do that, he's a different pitcher.
Yeah, maybe the best thing you might be able to say about Yu Darvish is that all last season he was hurt. You know, if that's the answer for all of your worries and he's not hurt now, then that's the easiest way for things to move on.
All right, let's move on to basketball. The NCAA tournament now underway. 2 play-in games tonight, 2 more tomorrow. The NIT kicks off tonight, and then for real, Thursday, 11 a.m. is when everything gets rocking and rolling. For me, 2 of the greatest days on the sports calendar. Okay, you look at this NCAA tournament, I think 46% of all brackets on CBS are picking Duke to win it. All right, Mr. Action Network, where are you analytically on this tournament?
I'm not in on Duke. If you look at that region, the East region, I'm taking Michigan State to win it all, number one, and beat Duke in the Elite Eight. And obviously you want to see the Duke-Michigan State matchup. We might not even get that. Virginia Tech beat Duke earlier in the season. Granted, that was without Zion Williamson.
So did Gonzaga with
exactly.
Zion Williamson.
And they were without Killian Tilly, too, for that matchup. Their third best big on that team. That team is loaded up front. But with Duke in that region, for me, if Michigan State and Duke match up in the Elite Eight, the big difference is Xavier Tillman against Zion Williamson. When Nick Ward went down with the hairline fracture for Michigan State, that changed everything for MSU defensively, because Xavier Tillman has become one of the best defensive bigs on that team and in the country since he got inserted into that starting lineup. Tillman against Zion is such a big matchup. The Matt McQuaid against R.J. Barrett, too. McQuaid's a really underrated defender. Cassius Winston, one of the best point guards in college basketball. We saw him take over against Michigan when he had the knee tendonitis. And he had the toe injury. So Michigan State, for me, is the answer, is Duke's kryptonite, really, in that region.
Could Duke have proved more when they lost Zion Williamson? Because I feel like he went out, he blew his shoe out and everything, and you're like, oh, there it is, Cam Reddish, he's going to step up and drain shots. R.J. Barrett, he's the guy out there anyway. And it felt like they spent a week and a half kind of middling and not finding themselves and almost mourning the loss.
Almost
of the guy
lost to Wake Forest at home.
It was that
kind of rebound Wake the basketball Forest earlier in the year. They're awful.
Terrible.
Horrible.
The big thing for me with Duke when Zion was out, this team can't shoot the 3 at all.
Yeah.
We're talking about the 16th lowest 3-point percentage in college basketball with and without Zion. So when Zion's on the floor, that creates a lot more space for Barrett and company to hit the 3. Reddish has also been terrible, another elite 5-star recruit that they got. Duke needs to shoot the 3 to win in the tournament, whether Zion plays well or not.
I don't know. I go back and forth on it because we always say what making your shots covers up a multitude of sins.
It does.
So at least you already know what sins Duke is committing. So it's like the devil, blue devil, we do know versus the blue
plus
devil.
They are very,
I really didn't mean to do that.
Oh,
I really
impressive.
Didn't mean to. No,
they
it's
are,
not. It's terrible.
They are elite as a 3-point defensive team. So it takes away some of the need to make threes.
But the biggest issue for Duke is their interior defense. We're talking about an ACC play. They give up the highest scoring rate. So that's a metric on KenPom. We were talking about that as well. The highest scoring rate inside the arc with and without Zion. So that's their transition defense. If UNC, for example, they were able to run all over them in all 3 matchups. I know Duke got the best of them in the last matchup. But if you get a team that can rebound the basketball, protect the rim, and push the floor, Duke is also in trouble there.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun in this tournament. Any upsets that jumped out at you as you broke these games down? Like, I give Yale a chance. I give Vermont a chance. I give New Mexico State a chance. The Anteaters from UC Irvine a chance. Like, there's some really, really, you know, highly seeded or low seeded teams that have a chance to at least win a game here.
I have most of your picks against the spread there, too, so we're somewhat on the same page. But I like St. Mary's to be able to pull off the upset over Villanova.
Agreed.
This Wildcats team, so we're on the same page there, too. This Wildcats team is flawed completely. People are going to say, well, Villanova won two of the last three national championships, so bet on Jay Wright, not this season. Eric Paschal and Phil hold on one second.
No, you're exactly right. They lost in the second round the year they didn't.
Exactly. And that team hasn't shot the three ball as well as they have all season long. Eric Paschal and Phil Booth, we're talking about around 30% from deep in their last nine games. So I understand that they win the Big East tournament title, but this St. Mary's team defends. They have the 44th. Lowest three-point clip defensively. So they defend the three really well. The 12th highest defensive rebounding rate. They play at a slow pace. You want to slow Villanova down. You do it with St. Mary's. Heck, we saw St. Mary's beat Villanova in 2010 as the 10 seed when the Wildcats were the 2 seed.
I kind of like this Nevada crew, the 7 seed. I like what Musselman's done with grad transfers the last little bit. I like teams that have like a good length across the front court. You know, somebody that can cover a little bit like Tennessee does.
Jordan Caroline.
A little bit. Yeah, a little bit like that. I like a little bit of what Syracuse does, but they do it with a zone at 2-3. So with turnarounds and matchups like that, he's always dangerous if he gets you to turn around quickly because nobody adapts that 2-3 zone fast enough. I really need, though, I need this out of my tournament this year. If you're telling me, Eli, that Zion's going to bow out maybe even earlier than anybody hopes, I need Ja Morant to make himself a 2-3-week player in this tournament.
Yeah,
I need that for my own.
No, I don't either.
I need it. I want it.
What about the first round against Marquette?
Is Marquette's kid, Marcus Howard, is he healthy?
That's the big issue. He had the wrist injury against St. John's.
If the wrist is healthy, I think Marquette wins.
But we saw an elite defender in Quincy McKnight for Seton Hall match up against him really well. I like this Murray State team defensively. They have the fourth. Their three-point defense is the fourth best in the country. And that's a Marquette team that relies on the three a lot. I think defensively, if you can control the tempo by shutting down Marquette's three-point game and John Morant's able to get out in transition, this Murray State team's in good shape.
I feel like they probably lose in the second round. That's usually what we see out of, like, the great guard teams with not a lot of backup behind him. I am giving myself fits over the Syracuse and Baylor matchup. And I think that Kelvin Sampson and U of H in the tournament could really make some waves.
So Texas.
These are the things that issue with me.
The Texas in you.
It is. Well, it's also the fact that Syracuse, you know, every year you think they're not going to be good, they are. And then Baylor really upset some teams in the Big 12. I think Texas Tech is the best team in that region, though, perhaps.
Texas Tech is very good.
I'm with you guys there, too. Texas Tech has the highest adjusted defensive efficiency in college basketball. Chris Beard, what he did at Arkansas Little Rock when they upset Purdue in that 14-3 matchup.
That was a comeback that I don't think many people saw coming.
They were down 14 with 3 minutes to go. I love what Chris Beard does defensively. Jarrett Culver, if Zion Williamson, he's worth so much to Duke. We're talking probably 6 or 7 points against the spread. Jarrett Culver's worth 2 or 3, maybe 3.5.
So who's your Final Four?
I got Texas Tech out of that South region or the West region. And then I have Michigan State out of the East region. I have Tennessee in the South region as the number 2 seed. So no number 1 so far. And then Auburn, number 5 seed in the Midwest region.
You've been on Tennessee for a little while. We talked, yesterday, something like that. They got crushed by Auburn in the SEC final. What's to say that Tennessee can't take a body blow like they did? Because that's what happened. I mean, Auburn hit a couple of threes to end that first half. Tennessee's looking around like, where'd he go? I'm not quite sure. And they just came out and blew the doors off that squad.
Yeah, Auburn could shoot the three, and they could do it at a really high rate. We're talking about the number 11 team.
And they can turn you over.
Exactly. Yeah, they have the highest turnover rate in college basketball. They protect the rim. They get on transition. They shoot a lot of threes. So that's just been a bad matchup for Tennessee all season long. And then you think about, on the flip side of things, Tennessee in that region, you have Purdue. Carson Edwards can shoot you out of a game just as much as he could shoot you back into it. I don't like that region that much. Virginia, we saw what happened to them against Florida State.
For me, they rely too much on the perimeter game.
Exactly. A terrible three-point percentage against Florida State. And when you think about a team that can rebound the basketball, if they match up Tennessee and Virginia, Wisconsin could also give Virginia some problems.
Your championship game.
Michigan State and Auburn.
And who wins it?
Michigan State.
Sparty party. There we go. All right, bad win for the Bulls last night. They had a chance to creep closer to the bottom three in the standings. Then Robin Lopez went and had a really good game against the Suns. Is it time for Jimmy Boylan's team to get serious the final 10 games about the tank?
The Cubs are poised to fly the W this October, and NBC Sports Chicago has the best postseason coverage in the city. Before and after every playoff game, watch Cubs pre- and postgame live to follow the run for the ring.
Well, Bulls went into Phoenix last night. Three Suns sat out. The Bulls said, Otto Porter, load management, you're out as well. But Robin Lopez, outstanding. In less than 30 minutes, I think he played 26 minutes. He had 24 points, and he just ate DeAndre Ayton's lunch. Young kid couldn't handle him. Okay, look, I know everyone wants him to lose every single game, but at some point, Jim Boylan has to stand in front of his team and go, guys, I can't just sit guys because they're playing well and just play five people out of the stands. Where are you on this?
He could play five people out of the stands. I mean, he subbed out all of his starters twice in a set of, what, half an hour or something like that. I mean, he's done it before. They're pretty much locked into the four, though, right? I mean, they're two wins behind
the Cavs.
They're
a game and a half.
Yeah, but it's the wins, and that's two. You can't put those back on the board, so you're kind of stuck there. I mean, they've been stuck in the four spot for about 6 weeks now, really. If you look at the schedules that are playing out, the absolute garbageness of the three
Cleveland
teams below them.
Night.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to keep on happening. But if they do, you're going to feel bad about a couple of nights where you played a few more guys. But if Robin Lopez is eating up DeAndre Ayton, like, what else can you do? Like, the Suns have more terrible to walk out there than you do. They just do.
Well, look, if the game last night was 104-103, I'd be like, really? You couldn't sit him just a few more? Yeah. They blew him out. They controlled him at the half. They won by 15. It is what it is, man.
It's progress for Lauri Markkanen. So a little wins like that. But overall, the big picture, if you get the fourth overall pick in the NBA draft, you think about Zion, R.J. Barrett, John Morant, the decline is steep from four down.
And then you're probably picking Darius Garland.
Exactly. And that he's coming off the torn ACL.
Right.
Okay, so Jim Boylan is the de facto face of this franchise now for whatever reason. It's just happening. We bring him up all the time when we talk about him. Are we going to talk about the coaching gaffes that made no sense, both in that game and then against the Clippers? Why call a timeout with 40 seconds to go at 14?
I did not have a problem with last night's timeout. The other one in the Sacramento game, I was like, I didn't get that timeout. But it seems like his players are buying in.
I guess that's where you got to credit him. You know, you got a
players
guy like Zach coming
in
out there and saying that he'd pay his fine for him and all that stuff. That's a lot better than in a post-game press conference every night for the better part of 3 weeks, looking around going, I don't know what coach is doing. I don't know what we're doing. I don't know why we're losing.
That's what was happening
before.
Don't
look at me, because that's where Zach was for like 3 weeks.
Right. And
that's
then
where
Casey Johnson said he had a long talk with him, and Zach said, this guy's fully vested. We're in.
But they're, I mean, regardless of where they're at, they're slipping back offensively kind of into the stuff that they'd done before. They're not running as much as
they think they've hit the wall.
Lauri Markkanen isn't hitting shots, so maybe if that's it, if he's going through a slump, then that's what it is. But, you know, defensively, since Boylan's taken over, it's been nothing, absolutely nothing. Whether that's a function of depth, whether that's a function of want to, or just Zach LaVine isn't able to play defense, all those things matter. But if you play it forward next season, like I saw a mock draft the other day that had DeAndre Hunter going to the Bulls, because why not? And he plays defense and the Bulls need it. And that can't be where you're drafting in this coming season. It can't be.
I mean, it very well
maybe they get lucky.
If you're able to get one of those top three picks. But if you can't, I saw some mocks as well that had the Bulls taking Rui Hachimura, which makes no sense because you just got Wendell Carter in last year's draft. So that drop-off, again, is so steep from what the Bulls need.
Right, that kid's a good player at Gonzaga, but I don't think that's what the Bulls need.
Right. You already have Markkanen and Wendell Carter, assuming he's ready to come back next season in your front court.
The defensive numbers are staggering. This is the whole point of why Boylan was brought in, and it's not improved at all, and that's the real concern. I don't really care because I am, war machinery-minded. But at the same time, you want to see an improvement in defense. That absolutely had to happen, and it's not happening.
Well, let's see where they end up in the draft. Maybe we'll all be going, they got who? Zion Williamson's a Bull? We'll see. Hey, number two is the magic number for Kyle Busch. He wins his second straight race. Now he has 200 career wins in NASCAR's top three series. Is he the best driver this decade? Scott Paddock will be in studio next to discuss that on STL.
There's the signature bow.
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
Another win for Kyle Busch. He dropped to 18th with 73 laps to go after a pit road speeding penalty, then raced his way through the field, passing both Brad Keselowski and Joey Logano with 26 to go, and nobody caught him after that. He takes the checkered flag at Sonoma, his second straight win, and a 200th in his career in the Cup, Xfinity, and Truck Series. Our guys, Scott Paddock, doesn't have to spend time watching Notre Dame in the tournament, so he joins us on Sports Talk Live.
That was cold.
I only speak the truth.
They're young. Give them a year or two.
Is this guy the best driver? I'm going to make a prediction. Mike Bray is not the coach at Notre Dame in a year.
Wow, really?
Yeah, I think he's going to get another job.
That's kind of bold.
Okay.
Wow.
Is Kyle Busch the best driver of the decade?
Of this decade, yes, he is. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, Jimmy Johnson, you know, won most of his championships earlier on. So he's certainly in the conversation. But this decade, I'd say Kyle Busch. I mean, 200 wins is 200 wins. And even though it's across all three of NASCAR's National Touring Series, unlike Richard Petty, who won them all in the Cup Series, Kyle Busch is definitely in that conversation. And he's now carved out a place among NASCAR's elite, no doubt about it.
All right, as we look towards what's going on with the different aerodynamic packages. Has everybody settled in? I know we're a few weeks into this thing now.
They're still kind of finding their rhythm. I mean, Joe Gibbs Racing won three out of the first five races. Now they've got it. They've got it figured out. They're in a good zone. Hendrick Motorsports still struggling a little bit. So I think they're still finding, and every week is a little bit of a different dynamic. So this next week, we're going to go to Martinsville, which is the first short track of the season. So that's a whole nother package involved. So
Layla.
Well, Chevy seems to have been struggling recently, only 8th and 9th in the standings, 5th place finish.
Yeah.
What's going on with the Chevy
driver? Well, I mean, Chevy is struggling a little bit. They introduced the Camaro last year, so you would expect that. But in year two now, you'd think they'd be getting a little bit more into their rhythm. I think this new aero package has thrown them off a little bit. And keep in mind, Hendrick Motorsports is the primary Chevy team with all four of their drivers, and Hendrick just hasn't figured it out by their standards. So I think that's a big problem, and they've got to figure it out quick.
I mean, Connor, as an old school person, it's hard to hear anybody be brought up in the same vein as Richard Petty and say 200 wins is equal.
Yeah, it's a remarkable accomplishment. And he's still young. You know, a NASCAR driver can be competitive, I think. Kyle Busch. A NASCAR driver can be competitive until 43, 44. Then you start losing a little bit of your mental acuity and your cognitive function, your reaction time. But Kyle Busch has a lot more years until he gets to that threshold. So look for him to continue this track he's on.
So we were talking about Mike Trout to start the show. The gulf between Trout and the next best player over these last 7 years is almost two players worth of space. What would you say that the gulf is between Petty and the next best? If you want to make it Busch, feel free. But like, what is the difference from top to the second spot?
Yeah, you know, some may disagree with me, but I think in the Petty era, I don't know that he had as many elite competitive drivers, you know, and that's he was a great racer, no doubt about it. But, you know, this day and age with Jimmy Johnson and Kevin Harvick and Kurt Busch and all of these great names that have been in the sport, even the recent ones that have retired with Earnhardt Jr., it is competitive pretty much top to bottom. So for Kyle Busch to stand out among today's generation of drivers, that's pretty impressive.
Okay, if you had to do your Mount Rushmore of the four greatest NASCAR drivers of all time, who are the four?
Wow. Gotta put Richard Petty up there. Okay. Gotta put Dale Earnhardt Sr. up there.
Uh-huh. Jimmy Johnson get on there?
I think you have to. With the three of them and Jimmy Johnson, they've won 7 championships. So those three. And then that last one, I think you could make an argument for Jeff Gordon, but Kyle Busch is kind of inching his way into there. So I'd say Busch or Gordon for that fourth spot right now.
All right, big announcement today, right?
Yeah, so music is a big part of, you know, the race day weekend festivities, and we announced that Lee Bryce, country music superstar, mm-hmm. everything he's had has hit gold or platinum. He's going to kick off Sunday's Camping World 400 on Sunday, June 30th, with a pre-race concert right in the infield, and we're excited about that. Music's a big part of the weekend.
All right, and then people can still go out and start ordering their tickets now.
They can. ChicagolandSpeedway.com. We've got it's our NASCAR Summer Festival, so anything you think about when you think of a summer festival, carnival rides, we've got motocross as an exhibition, we've got a barbecue competition, we've got Lee Bryce, and they're even trying to talk me into bringing a swimming pool out this year, Cap. So
nice.
Bring your bathing suit.
I'll bring the Speedo.
Absolutely. Whoa.
All right, we're at Martinsville this week.
Yeah, short track. What's really unique about Martinsville, asphalt on the straightaways, concrete on the turns. So the track will take on rubber and take rubber out of the tires in different ways. So balance and the handling of the car comes into play.
What are the speeds that gets up to?
They'll be pushing, you know, about 100, 110, 20 miles an hour, so on the straightaway. But hairpin turns, great short track racing. You have to be patient on these short tracks like Martinsville because passing is very tough because there's not a lot of room. So, you know, typically you're going to see someone knock someone out of the way to get by them.
All right, we got to make our picks.
I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin. He's considers this in one of his hometown tracks, Virginia native, and he's had a lot of good success there over the years.
I'm going to go with Joey Logano.
Okay.
So we'll see how
All
that
right, good
works
luck,
out because I had Kyle Busch last week. So I've been rolling.
You are rolling. I'm playing catch-up, huh?
You are playing catch-up. All right. It's the time of year when every point counts. The Blackhawks dropped a big one last night. They fall in overtime to the Canucks. How many wins do they need in their final 10 games to make it to the playoffs? Jeremy Roenick will join us next on STL.
Cubs are poised to fly the W this October, and NBC Sports Chicago has the best postseason coverage in the city. Before and after every playoff game, watch Cubs pre- and post-game live to follow the run for the ring.
Blackhawks got a point, but really needed two last night. They fall in overtime to the Canucks. They're just 4 points back, 10 games left to play in the regular season. Our guy, JR, Jeremy Roenick, joins us to talk some pucks. Okay, JR, Hawks have pivotal games. Colorado, Arizona around the corner, Dallas. How many points will Chicago need to get in their final 10 to get into the playoffs?
Well, there's no question that that point last night against the Vancouver Canucks was devastating. And, you know, you can't expect to make the playoffs if you don't beat teams that are underneath you or teams that you should beat in your own building. Vancouver is a good team, there's no question, but they're both battling for playoff spots, and Chicago's got to find a way to win that hockey game. You know, coming up with these other teams, they have 74 points. You'd think probably 90, 91 points on the low side, possibly 89, but 90 looks like the number that's going to get into the playoffs. I mean, that with that being said, that's 7 or 8 wins that the Chicago Blackhawks have to have, and even if they do that, they're going to need some help. So they have to jump over 4 teams. The odds of that are very, very small. To be safe, maybe they can afford to lose one more the rest of the way and then hope they get some help. But, you know, it's been a tough year for them in certain points of the year. But you got to give them a lot of credit for the moxie and for the hard work that they've battled to stay in it.
Which two teams do you ultimately think will get those wild card spots out west?
Well, if you look at the schedule, if I'm a betting guy, I think Minnesota is a team that has found a way to get into the playoffs late. They play well coming down the stretch. Whether Arizona is going to be able to keep up the pace that they have right now, having their backup goaltender in, still having a couple major injuries, they've been playing playoff hockey now for over 2 months. I don't know whether they're going to have that stamina to keep it up. But I think those would be my top two. I just don't think that Colorado has the scoring and the offensive and I think the secondary scoring that they're going to need to maintain enough points to get in. So I think odds on Minnesota, Arizona.
Who has a better chance to top their career high? Patrick Kane in points, Jonathan Toews in goals.
You know, you got to take your hat off to both these guys. I've seen great performances and consistency in my years of being in the game and now watching the game. But to watch these two night in and night out, regardless of what kind of help that they get, put up numbers and continue to lead this team and be on the top of their game and the upper echelon of the National Hockey League. Give Jonathan Toews a lot of credit for the year he's had. I think he'll definitely get his goals total. Patrick Kane, he can put up 4 or 5 points a game, so he's going to get his career high. But I think for sure Jonathan Toews getting that goal record, I think, is pretty impressive after the year he had last year. We need Patrick Kane to score some goals. He's been on a drought here. He's only 9 goals away from 500. We want him to get that. That'd be a pretty good story in a year where they might miss the playoffs.
Corey Crawford's been lights out his last 6 games. Should the Blackhawks ride their hot goalie every single game down the stretch?
Well, for me, from a guy from the outside, Corey Crawford is the backbone of this hockey team in terms of their defense. I think their D men are not on top of their game. I think when it comes down to getting wins, you have to have your best goaltender in there, especially in the heat of the moment, which is the last 10 games of the season. To me, I don't know how Corey feels physically. I know he got pulled out of the game in Toronto last week due to sickness, but number one is take care of Corey Crawford's mental health and his physical ability to play and make sure that he is fine in terms of his own head and playing the game. If you protect him there and make sure that he's the one making the decision and with the doctors, you run this guy as long as you can, because if they miss the playoffs, he's got a lot of time to rest and get ready for next year. But he is definitely one of the most important pieces to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Hey, I'm hanging out with Jeremy Roenick in Vegas. We walk into the sports book. I go, JR, I'm going to buy you a ticket. You can have one team out of the Western Conference that you could bet on to win Lord Stanley's Cup this year. Who's Jeremy putting the money on?
I'm putting on San Jose because their goaltending, they're the highest scoring defense in the National Hockey League, and their offense is potent. They have the best secondary scoring in the game, so I'm going with San Jose Sharks.
All right, and if you took out of the East, are you sticking with Tampa?
It's got to be Tampa. They're the only ones that can beat themselves. I think there's one team that scares Tampa to death, and that's the Boston Bruins. And, so that shows you what Toronto's got to go through to try to get there. But Boston is extremely strong also.
Hey, man, appreciate the knowledge as always.
You got it. Good to see you. Go Hawks, 9 to 10. Here we go.
All right, there's our guy Jeremy Roenick. So Blackhawks are in a world of hurts because they got to climb over more than just one team. Do you think they can run them down? What does the analytical breakdown say? Because for me, I don't see how they get there.
I don't expect it either. And again, the power play was so good for that stretch of games where the Hawks were so hot and they moved up to, 3 points back of that final Western Conference playoff spot. But I don't see it.
No, I hope so, but I don't think it's going to happen.
I love playoff hockey.
It's the best. Playoff hockey is the best.
Not better than March Madness.
Whoa! No! It's the second best. Playoff hockey is the second best. It's full of nervous everything. You just go back to the changeover from Quenneville to Colleton and just what could have been, the fits and the starts and getting veterans on key. I mean, really, it's a credit to the organization for having gotten themselves to a point that they're at. And I think you build yourself up from next year. They've made some decent trades.
When they have cap space.
I worry so much about Corey Crawford. I can't. Every save he makes, I worry. I'm just a wreck every single time.
Yeah, I think there's definitely stress there when it comes to Corey Crawford and his performance, how well he really is. How well is he going to be maybe after some time off? Is it us? Are we the ones still holding on to false hope? I feel like we might be a little bit. I'd love to say that this is a team that can make the playoffs, and after that great streak they had, I surely thought so. But then they had those huge losses to teams that are contending for playoffs.
Losing to the LA Kings.
And then the Kings, yeah. And all of those say, these are your benchmarks. They're just not there yet, and that's okay.
Wouldn't it be so fun in the playoffs, too?
Like they got
7-6 finishes. There's no defense at all. Just score 8 or 9 goals.
But you have a goalie that could steal you a win.
They're so different.
Like Saturday night, I watched the game 48. And went, you got to be kidding me. He was amazing. I thought he was great last night.
Yeah, he was. He really was, especially in the second when the Hawks had nothing going on.
Nothing.
And no chances whatsoever.
He keeps them alive.
Yeah.
We've seen upsets. I mean, Nashville was the 8th seed against the Hawks a few years back.
But the Hawks lost.
On the bad side
swept.
Of things on that one.
And that's the one that really bothers me, along with losing to the Blues in the first round. It hasn't been fun for the Hawks in the playoffs right now, and I don't really like that.
All right, we're going to call our final timeout. We'll talk some more NCAAs when we wrap up STL right after this.
For Chicago Sports Talk with Sizzle, crank up the heat and turn on STL. Host David Kaplan brings his no-nonsense opinion to the table every weeknight on the topics that are trending with our teams. Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado, weeknights at 6 on NBC Sports Chicago.
All right, welcome back on Sports Talk Live. So the NCAA tournament kicks off tonight. You got Prairie View with a decent lead at the half in a play-in game. I remember, Eli, that I think it was VCU was a first four team. They played at Dayton. They beat USC with, I think, Nikola Vucevic.
That was in Chicago.
No, at Dayton.
Oh, at Dayton. Okay.
At Dayton. And then they end up making a run to the Final Four. Is there anybody playing in the first four that you look and go, they can make a run, maybe not to win a title, but to go a couple of rounds?
Yeah, Temple, who plays tonight, could be a very interesting team. Fran Dunphy, this is his last season at Temple. And their three-point defense is the trigger to their success. They have one of the best three-point defenses, above-average three-point defense in college basketball. Shiz Alston, one of the more underrated point guards in the country.
And Quinn Rose can play.
Yeah, really good defensive guy. One of the best turnover guys, too, in terms of creating turnovers. And Belmont doesn't turn the basketball over. Dylan Windler, a really good three-point shooter. Rick Bird, one of the better offensive minds in the country. But if Temple's able to hold them down on the three-point shot and control the tempo, get out in transition with Shiz Alston, I like Temple's chances tonight. I think it's +3. I have them covering that.
You got Temple +3 covering the line. There you go. There's a little tip for everybody out there if you're going to get their feet wet.
You know what we didn't talk about at all doing the whole tournament first against Kentucky? We didn't spend a minute on the Blue Blood. And I just wonder if this team has shaped up the way Coach Cal expected it to this season. You know, every year he's got to take the next crop of freshmen and mold them into a basketball team and force them out there. They've got a decent enough bracket on their bottom right-hand side, I think.
The Midwest region.
Yeah, and I kind of like them shaping up, but I don't know that that's an Elite Eight team the way that thing shakes out.
Good guard play in Ashton Hagans, their freshman point guard. His assist to turnover ratio has improved dramatically on SEC play. The big difference with this Kentucky team from years past, under John Calipari, you have experience in the front court. P.J. Washington stayed for his sophomore season. The graduate transfer from Stanford, Reed Travis. I just don't like that region for Kentucky. If Wofford advances out of that 7-10 matchup, Fletcher McGee is a player to watch for in the tournament.
And Wofford can shoot it.
They have the second highest three-point shooting clip in college basketball. Seton Hall with Miles Powell, they could shoot it too. So I'm excited to see, and Seton Hall beat Kentucky earlier this season in non-conference play. That 7-10 matchup for Kentucky could give the Wildcats issues.
Okay, what about a team like Kansas? They're missing their three best players. Azubuki's not going to play. As you look at that team, they take on a Northeastern team that can score.
I love Northeastern. One of the best three-point shooting percentages in college basketball. They did it to Hofstra. Justin Wright Foreman, a really good score for Hofstra. And you think about Kansas, one of the worst three-point defenses in the country, let alone the Big 12. And they really struggled against Iowa State in that Big 12 tournament title game. I expect Northeastern to not only pull off the upset, get the money line as well.
Wow. All right. Don't be a stranger. Come back.
Appreciate it, Kevin.
Got it. All right, guys. Thanks for being here. That is a wrap for Sports Talk Live, presented by the Chevy Silverado. Remember, we have White Sox spring training baseball later tonight. Southsiders take on Cincinnati at 8 o'clock. Have a great evening. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll be live from the United Center. David Haw, Jordan Cornette on the show. See ya.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.